This is Nijan Footy with Sam Wykes and Tinirao Arona on ABC Radio Australia.
Kia ora Māori and happy Kiribati Language Week to our Kiribati listeners, and welcome everyone to Nijan Footy, the number one place for Pacifica footy news and stories in the rugby league and rugby union world. My name is Tinirao Arona, and alongside me is my koi who has just come back from the beautiful island of Palau. He has not stopped talking about it this whole morning. Sammy Wykes, welcome back to Nijan Footy, brother. I missed you.
Oh, T, I must say, I wish I was still there in paradise. It was unbelievable.
Hey, remember your wife's listening to this, mate.
No, she doesn't listen. She's sick of my voice already. I've only been back. I just got back yesterday.
I know.
I just got back yesterday.
But nice tan there.
Oh, mate, honestly, Palau and the people there, up there number one.
Well, before we get to our intro, this is going to be our moment of the week.
Okay.
Give us your highlights about Palau.
All right.
Moment of the week.
The food. So fresh. I'm not really a seafood. Are you a seafood man?
I'm a seafood man.
I'm not like a massive seafood fan. I'll eat salmon and sashimi salmon, but like other fish, I probably wouldn't do it. Lobster, crab, wouldn't do it. And I was able to have all of that fresh out of the water.
Straight from the ocean, straight to your plate.
Straight from the ocean to plate. Ocean
Damn.
To plate. Within about, say, 15, 20 minutes.
You were there for work, right, though?
I was there for work, and we did some of our openers, you know, our piece to camera, and some of the most, I guess, picturesque locations.
Paradise.
So, like, yeah, if you just see some of my, for that Pacific Sports show, we did a piece to camera, and the background, it was that clear, white sand into clear ocean, into blue sky, into the sun.
How good. And you were there for many Pacific games.
Yep.
Athletes, talk to me. What were they like?
It's really cool to see how much it means to athletes to represent their family and their country. Like, we see it probably from a team sport point of view.
Yep.
But just seeing it from a point of view from table tennis. You know, a young 9-year-old Malia Maasi from Tonga. She's only 9, representing Tonga in table tennis.
9 years old.
9 years old.
A 9-year-old girl
up against adults.
Country.
Yep. And her grandfather was the coach.
Man, I don't even know if I could.
And man, she's there in her cartoon socks. Her shoelace was untied, and just returning serve.
Did you play?
No. I just watched. She would have. It would have been clean sweep. Okay. But that was cool. And then just seeing the weightlifters, just seeing like the va'a, you know, the canoeing. That was the first time I've ever experienced the canoeing, and I thought that was cool to see, like a race, like neck and neck, like the paddlers going at it, and Ann Cairns from Samoa, 40 years of age, and some of her competitors were like 20 and 19, and she said, "This one's for all the aunties out there." So that was cool from an athlete point of view.
How good. Well, we do have a show here to cover today, Sammy. Nijan Footy Mondays. We are not going to do, I'm going to give you a break on Give Me Three at the end of our show.
Because thank you. I totally forgot.
Thank you. Yeah. I know you had a whole week in Palau, so I'll let you take next weekend.
Give me more time to think about. Thank you. I appreciate that, my friend.
But we do still have plenty to talk about. NRL Round 18, Australia Wallabies. They took on the Flying Fijians,
yep,
which you will cover. But the big guy on our show, or the big moment on our show, will be our guest, Sam Moa. He is quite the talent. You know, he's had a journey in rugby league where he's won a premiership for the Sydney Roosters. He's represented New Zealand. He's represented Tonga. He's created history for the Catalan Dragons, winning their first Challenge Cup, and he is now the assistant coach for the Parramatta Eels.
That's a resume and a half. How good's that? And I feel like we should take a little bit longer, I believe, just with him, because I know that what he will say will definitely impact, you know, people wanting to go to that next level. So let's spend a little bit more time with him.
And alongside Sammy, actually, we've got Shelley Long for the Long Story Short.
That's right, NRLW.
Who will talk about all of the weekend's NRLW Round 1 opening games over the weekend.
Hi, I'm Yasmin Clydesdale, and you're listening to Nijan Footy.
Well, let's get straight into our footy news. Now, NRL Round 18 kicked off over the weekend, and on Thursday night, we've seen the Brisbane Broncos take on the Bulldogs in Sydney. Bulldogs being one of the competition favourites, and the Broncos starting to find some form. So it was an interesting match. Now, the Bulldogs, this first half, was absolutely on fire. Tries to Fiji and Marcelo Montoya. Also another Fijian, Viliami Kikau. He scored a try. And the Bulldogs, they actually had an 18-0 lead with 35 minutes of footy left. The Broncos then flicked the switch in the last quarter. Now, a 40-meter run to score a try by their winger, Josiah Kapani. He starts the comeback. 5 minutes later, Ezra Mann passes a pearler to Deluise Hoyta. He broke the Brisbane defensive line, scored the next try. Billy Walters, their hooker, scoots over, scores another. Now the scores is 18-16, only about 10-15 minutes to go. Then their hooker, Billy Walters, he scoots over for their third try, making it 18-16 to the Dogs. Broncos on the comeback. And then in the 73rd minute, the same play that was played for Deluise's try, Ezra Mam, he hits the Cook Island international, Brendan Piakuta, to score the match winner, making it four wins in a row for the Broncos.
It comes left now to Ricky. They're going to win this, Brisbane. They're 11 metres out. The ball is going to be played to Walters. He sends it out the back left to Reynolds. Links up with Ezra Mam. He got the pass away to Piakura. Through 1-2 over. Brisbane's hammering Canterbury. They hit the lead for the first time. 20-18. Piakura scores. Canterbury wouldn't beat a Jersey flag team in this second half.
Broncos now sit fifth on the ladder, finding some form, as I mentioned, Bulldogs with the loss. Now, this last game I want to mention is the Tongan Tigers create history. Now, losing six in a row, all the noise, all the pressure up against the Tigers. You know, players talk about players leaving the club and internal fights with the players and the coaching staff on the training paddock. So, look, I thought the Roosters were going to run away off this one quite comfortably. Now, the Tigers scored four tries in total, but their last three tries, because the Fainu brothers, Latu Fainu, Sione Fainu, and Samuela Fainu, they become the first three brothers to score a try in the same game in the NRL era.
Played to Hope, goes left to Latu Fainu, cut out ball to Dewey, then he got the pass away, and diving over to score the try is Samuela Fainu. When was the last time three bros scored on the same day? First up, it was Latu Fainu, then Sione Fainu, now Samuela Fainu. It's a Fainu party.
Huge achievement, and they go on and end up beating the Roosters.
So the Trevoyabi brothers haven't all scored. That's a hell of a record.
But yeah, they end up going on and beating the Roosters 30-28. It was also Roosters old boys round, but Roosters end up scoring more tries, but the Tigers scored, kicked more goals, also got a few penalty goals. Now remember, you can hear every NRL game live on ABC Radio Australia. Sammy, we've also got State of Origin this Wednesday night. Who are you tipping?
I need New South Wales to win because you've put us in all those bets with Thorthai and Nisha Daly. So, New South Wales getting this one home. But I am a bit worried about this one with Papali'i coming back. So yeah,
whenever it comes to a decider and then you bring back the old bulls in Papali'i, he's a little bit nervous. Don't know what to expect. But
home ground.
I am going to the game with my boys as well, so nice. I'll be able to bring you some good feedback on that whole atmosphere. In the Queensland Cup, the PNG Hunters have broken their losing streak against the number one team on the ladder last weekend, winning 34-16 against the Blackhawks. They remain eighth on the Queensland Cup ladder. And in the New South Wales Jersey flag, another blow to the Cavite Silktails last weekend with the Panthers getting the dub 36-16. Let's head straight over to rugby before we get to Shelley Long.
T, we're going to stay on the Fiji theme. We're going to go straight to the Wallabies game. And I did manage to watch this game on the plane. Wi-Fi was on the plane. So I was able to watch that Fiji test match. It did buffer a little bit.
Well, guess what? Toops actually tipped Fiji for did your he? Tipping.
Did he?
But...
Well, he was right up until the 77th minute. The Fiji
oh, really?
Were in front.
They
yes.
went that far deep.
Yeah, they so went that far right. deep. So it was... I was actually tipping Fiji as well. I thought in this game, it was a tight contest. I thought it was actually a really, really good test match as well. And what I want to say to people as well, everyone needs to get out of their head that Fiji, it's, they're just not yeah, participation of yeah, players coming
a,
together.
It's not a run through.
It's not a run through anymore. Mate, they're T1 quality. And they showed that. And they had less preparation time than the Wallabies. But it went down to the wire, 21-18 win to the Wallabies. And they got their test window off and running with a win. It was played in Newcastle in front of a packed house. And I guess this game itself, probably similar fashion to the way teams like to play the draw. You know, the Wallabies tried to make sure that they won the territory battle. I think it was like 70% territory in the first half and tried to make Fiji always play out of their half. And there was times where the crowd got on their feet because you could see it building where the Fijians, they didn't want to kick, they wanted to play, but it was just some errors, some turnovers that just sort of let them down a bit. But what I did like as well, these are some three things that I liked about this game. Lenny Kitau from the centre from the Wallabies and Lungi Gleeson, number 8 from the Wallabies, or number 6, sorry, in this game. They were star performers. They just got the Wallabies on the front foot with their ball carries. You know, every time they carried, they got momentum and they created quick ball. I thought those two blokes were unreal. Number 2, the matchup between Len Ikitau and Tui Sova, the number 12s, clash of titans. Big humans. Oh, I'd say Tui Sova's.
Who won the battle?
Very even. Very even battle.
Nah, you're sitting on the fence.
Now, the reason why I say that, because Len Ikitau was probably man of the match in my eyes, because he did get a lot of front football, especially first phase carry. And Tui Sova, some of his carries, it did some damage. And what I loved about Tui Sova in this one, once he saw the defense tighten up a little bit on him, I didn't realize he had a passing game as well. So he was able to draw some defenders in,
tip it on.
Fiji got some ascendancy on the edges because the defensive line was shortened and there was space on the edge. Number 3, Wainikolo, Fijian wingers. What do you know about Fijian wingers, T?
Fast, powerful, can catch the ball from anywhere and can score a lot of tries.
Right. This guy is he has sevens background and he's not your Nemanja Kundrani type of player. He's not like big. He's not tall like all the other ones. He's like that hot stepper. Honestly, he could step you in a phone booth. He could turn on a dime and he was world class in this game. And he set up a beautiful try just off the, off one of like some scrappy play, just went straight through the middle and he is going to be another superstar winger for Fiji. Finally, the last one, I'll say Suali'i.
Oh, how'd he go?
He had some nice touches. Like his short passing game is elite.
Is he British Lions ready, though?
I think he is.
British and Irish.
But I would have him on the wing still. I just think that...
Where'd they play him, fullback?
Nah, 13, oh, outside centre. I just think that because Lenny Kitau was getting so much momentum first phase, he was always the one that had to clean out. So he missed some of those opportunities to get like ball in space.
Yeah, so if you clean out, you're not in a position to get the ball in your hand.
Not really, yeah. Like yeah. You will at some point on maybe phase 2 or 3, but I just think that him being on the wing, he would have more clear space and I think he would have more opportunity. But yeah, great test match first up. The Wallabies will now go and get ready for the Lions and the Fijians. They'll get ready for Scotland this weekend.
Too easy. Let's get over to Shelley Long for the long story short.
The long story short with Shelley Long.
I would like to welcome our injured but recovering PNG Orchid star and NRLW player, Shelley Long. Shell, how you been?
I've been good, guys. I did get flogged on Friday, which, you know, the lungs were dying, the heart was dying, but we got through it. I'm here today. That's all that matters.
And we've just seen a very, very entertaining opening round to the NRLW, and I loved the try celebrations. We probably forgot to mention it on when I was previewing the NRL, a number of those try celebrations, Daly Cherry Evans being one of my favourites, where he grabbed the goalpost and used it as a walking stick. an old man's walking stick.
Oh, so Try July. Is that what's
try
happening?
Try July.
Oh,
yep. Okay. Try there July. What were some of your favorite shell?
Oh, there were so many to pick from. I think for me, I don't have a favorite. I think the team ones, I think the girls, they do a lot of preparation for these Tri-July celebrations. And this year we finally get to have four games in that Tri-July period. So I was loving the team one that the girls chose.
When they all got together, the New Zealand Warriors actually done a cool one where now they've done the pukana. I don't know if the women's call it pukana, but all the girls at the same time looked at the camera and it was a fierce look after their first try for against the Sydney Roosters. But let's rip straight into round one. NRLW, what stood out for you?
I think for me what stood out the most was the Bulldogs' entrance into the NRLW, their first time coming into the competition, and they versed a really tough Knights team. They ended up walking away with the win, 26 points to 12. Outstanding performances from them, and I think when you watch that game, they really looked like they were ready for business when they stepped on the field.
Who stood out? Which player stood out for you for the Bulldogs?
For me, definitely Ash Quinlan. She was great for them. I think she's been an awesome buy. I mean, across the board, I think a lot of the Bulldogs really stood out. There was also one player who actually is a former Fijian Sevens player, Adivani Bulecki. She was great for the Bulldogs as well on the wing.
I didn't know Bulecki went there from the Fijian Drua. She's a star. Add her to the list. Oh,
there's that many. Actually, across over the weekend, I noticed a number of fast players out on the field, and a lot of them ended up were past union players.
Sevens background,
sevens union players. Yeah.
I didn't realise Bulecki left. That's you caught me off guard there. It's because I've been in Palau for too long. I'm not up to date. But the Dogs in general, like I know they got the result. They won. Did they look like a collective team, like a team that's not brand new? Was it pretty cohesive?
Honestly, watching them, you would think that they have been in the competition for a lot longer than what they've been in it for. I think that the way that they've bought into the culture, I think the way that their coach has really used their strengths to really help build them has been great to see. And also, you know, when you're looking at the amount of people with experience and also a lot of players who have just debuted recently, I think across the board as a collective, they've done really well to look well-structured in attack and defence.
And we have to mention the Cowboys. You're a big supporter of theirs. And I will say, I didn't think they were going to win, but they ended up going out there and winning. What are your thoughts on the Cowboys?
Oh, I think they're looking on fire. Always, always unbiased opinions here. But the Cowboys, they ended up winning 20 points to 6. I think in their trial game, they were definitely testing out their combinations. They're ahead of round one. And I think it probably gave the Titans a little bit of false sense into what they really could deliver. There was a strong performance across the board from all players. And I think even talking to the girls after the game, you know, I think everyone did their job really well. And it stood out in that game.
Yep. I saw Alia Nasio made her debut for the Roosters, back rower, Tongan. Gun player, but who else made their debuts across the round one of the competition?
So, you know what? There were so many girls across the competition that made their debuts, and it's great to see the amount of talent coming through. I think particularly when you look at the Parramatta Eels, for instance, they had a lot of rookies starting in that game, which was great to see, especially when, you know, unfortunately players get injured, it allows them to grasp a position. And I think for me, the Warriors, Patricia Malipo was outstanding, especially coming in from a different code, playing her first game of rugby league in the NRLW. She was outstanding for me.
Was that the 5'8", though, the back rower, no, the 5'8" that scored a try?
Yes.
Yeah, she was gone. She was a good kicker too. When you, after round one, we've seen all the teams play, who do you think is favourite to take out the competition? I know it's early, but you're not allowed to sit on the fence.
Round one predictions. I love it.
Round one predictions. Well, If I'm looking off of this round one, I'm going Cowboys and Bulldogs grand final.
Wow. Did you not watch the Roosters play on the weekend? Oh, my days. They're going back to back.
Are they?
They're going back
Look
to back.
sharp.
Okay, I did watch them, but the injury tolls out of the Roosters at the moment. There's a lot of injuries there, and I think you've lost Jamie Frazard, suspected elbow dislocation. Taron Aikin's currently not playing. Amber Parris-Hall isn't in there at the moment, and they've still got a few in the clouds. Depending on when they return, in a short season, you need your players for the majority of the games to be successful. So I don't know. It's a way up.
Do you know who the my smoky is though?
Who?
And I think that was strong smoky. It's my old 20s coach, Steve Georgialis. He coaches Parramatta Eels and they look sharp on Thursday night.
That was my next question. Like, are the Parramatta Eels, are they a surprise in your eyes the way they beat the Sharkies?
You know what? I actually was thinking that the Parramatta Eels were going to win in that game. There's a few teams that I feel like last week, I said I think they're going to come out with a bang in round one, and T sat on the fence there in that part of it. I made some big calls, but I think you know what, the Parramatta Eels, they definitely showed that, particularly in the with their young players coming up, that they're ready for business. And I think they've got a very strong, not only strong 18-man squad, but a strong 24-man squad. And I think no matter what happens in that squad, there's always players ready to step up and run on the field.
Yeah, River Lee, the lock there. She played really well, partnered Elsie Albert in the middle, but also they were missing Kennedy Cherrington as well. So there's still some
Okay,
strikes
still
come back for
come
the
back.
Eels.
What about the Tigers? I can't wait to bring the Tigers up with Sulla. Talking about the fitter, faster, stronger preseason.
Nah, Broncos are just too good.
Are they too good? That's what I was
Yeah.
asking. Was that just a tough one first up for the Tigers?
You know what? I think that if you when you watch the game, the Tigers do really well until they do a charge down. It was that one of their back rowers runs out, charges down the ball, and it just put a lot of pressure on their middles. And I think if you take away that charge down, I think the Tigers stay in it for a lot longer. And then they go into half time, the middles get a break, and then it's a different kind of ball game. But the Broncos, their execution, they're just cutthroat in this competition, and I think they're really out to prove something. But in saying that, the West Tigers fullback for me was outstanding in Jitea Faifua.
Beautiful. Before we head over to rugby union, have you got any other league news for us?
I do. Unfortunately, Philomena Hanisi potentially suffered an ACL rupture in that first game for the Sharks. She will go for scans either today or tomorrow, but it's definitely a tough ruling out for the Sharks, especially after a great dominant start to the first half of that game.
Damn, that was the solid middle that scored a try as well. He scored the Sharks' first try, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Damn, all thoughts and prayers to her. Hopefully, she recovers well.
Yeah, it looked like there was a fair few injuries in round one. I was in Palau. I was on the beach. Did I mention I was in Palau? And I just got a couple of updates. It looked like there was a lot of injuries. So hopefully there's not too many more in round two. Rugby union, I know there's a little bit of news there around squads. What have you got for us there?
Yeah, so over in rugby union, the Black Ferns versus the Black Ferns XV on Saturday. It was a great game, but very dominant performances from the Black Ferns. They defeated the Black Ferns XV 45 points to 12. If you look at the squads, it definitely looked like it was the Possibles and Probables team. There wasn't, it kind of looked like the main team that they will look to take to the World Cup was playing in the Black Ferns team, but a lot of key performance in there. And I think, they'll just keep going strength to strength. I think it's great to see, though, that they're using that development squad or the Possibles or Probables squads to really help strengthen across the board everyone sitting in that talent pool.
Here's a question for you, for both of you. Would you rather be in the Possibles team or the Probables team? Are you probably going to make it or you're possibly going to make it?
What's one's the furthest away from making it?
I don't know.
Is it the probables?
I think it's probables.
Possibles.
Or possibles. I've always
I want to go into the team that's furthest away so I can prove a point going, I'm playing against the better players.
You don't
and I'll be the
that?
Best player and be better than them.
I reckon that might be possibly would be the one furthest away. Like probably you're likely to be in. Possibly. Is there a bit more?
Well, if I go, Sammy, you're probably going to make this team. Or Sammy, you're possibly going to make this team.
I guess it's the way you say it. Anyway, get to the next bit.
Sorry, Shel.
We sidetrack.
And was there any other rugby union news?
There was. So the Wallaroos squad has been updated. This team will now take on the Black Ferns this weekend, and then they'll also follow through to play Wales twice at home before they head into the World Cup. I will note that I was a bit disappointed to see that Manoa Moleka wasn't selected after her fabulous campaign last week. She wasn't named in that squad, but I'm really hoping that something comes up where she's able to join in, because I think, you know, she was outstanding in that performance against Samoa, and I feel like there should be a spot for her.
Yeah, she's still very young. That's Faitala's younger sister. And you're right, she went well in Super W this year, and she did play well, scored a nice try in that game against Samoa, so she'll stay ready and she might get the call up later in the year. Still plenty of time.
Beautiful, Shel. Well, let's touch on the rugby union updates next Monday here on Nijin Footy. But in the meantime, have a great week and appreciate you for jumping on.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, guys. I'm Alan Alalatoa. I'm from the Wallabies and you're listening to Nijin Footy.
All right, Sammy. Well, I've been trying to get this guy on our show ever since he landed back in Australia, and I've been looking forward to this one. An old teammate of mine, he first made his debut for the Cronulla Sharks all the way back in 2008. He played one game before heading to England and representing the Hull FC. For 4 years, he was even in England in the Super League, and then he made his way back to the Sydney Roosters. And if you remember that 2013 team that took out the Premiership, well, this guy was one of the guys that led the way, and he spent 4 years there. Then he went back to the Super League, created history for the Catalan Dragons, the French team, winning the Challenge Cup in 2018. He's alongside that, he's also represented Tonga 10 times, played for the New Zealand Kiwis 9 times, and he is now the new assistant coach for the NRL team, Parramatta Eels. I want to welcome the one and only Sam Moa. Man.
What an introduction. what an intro. A resume. How good was
what
that?
What do I owe you for that?
I was just thinking, when you look back at...
Too kind.
I wrote that down. I'm like, man, this guy's done it all.
But your paper's on the floor.
Have you ever had time to reflect and think, damn, well, actually, you've done a fair bit in our game, and it sounds like the new chapter is only just beginning.
Yeah, it's been a there's been a bit of a journey, and you know, once you step back and have a look... Of course, there's some things I'm very proud of, but it's what I'm actually proud of is the path that I took. Sort of wasn't your traditional, you know, come out of high school and make it, and then I had to sort of find my way through, and I made some mistakes, and then went over to England, and then come back to the NRL, and sort of hope to think that I learned from those mistakes that I made, and just look, I played in some really good teams, and once I got my act together off the field, it sort of coincided with how well I started playing on the field. So it usually goes hand in hand, doesn't it? So a lot of lessons learned. My background, I was born and raised in Auckland, a little suburb called Mangere Bridge. It's just not far from the airport. Loving household, loving family. Parents are Tongan. So mum and dad had my eldest 3 siblings in Tonga, and then moved over to New Zealand in the late 60s, I'm pretty sure, yeah, late 60s, early 70s, for a better lifestyle, and then had the following 4. So I'm the youngest of 7. Had a very loving upbringing, and very grateful my parents are still alive, and 6 siblings are still alive. One passed away earlier this year, which was a hard transition. So yeah, had a very good upbringing there in New Zealand, and very proud Tongan. Very proud New Zealander as well.
Whereabouts in Tonga is your family from?
Yep. So mum is from a little town in Hihifo called Kolobai.
Yeah.
Hihifo boys. Mum's family, mum's got a pretty good sporting background in that side. And my father's from Vava'u, beautiful little island. I bypass Tonga and go straight to Vava'u. If anyone's listening, go to Vava'u.
Pristine water out there in Vava'u.
Well, I mentioned earlier, yeah, you made your NRL debut back in 2008, but only played one game for Cronulla Sharks, and then moving over to England. What was the reason why, when you look back at that time, the reason why you only played that one game and then made the decision to go to England?
Yeah, it's a pretty funny story, too. I was at the Sharks and I had a preseason there with Ricky Stewart and Jimmy Dimmick. He took me over there from the Tongan World Cup in 2008. So started that year, 2008, Jimmy Dimmick took me over. It was like a training trial. I was a young sort of 20, 21-year-old trying to make it through, and I got the opportunity to train full-time with the NRL team. And I started to get myself fitter, and preseason was very hard under Ricky Short, and I was so terrified of him. Anyhow, one day he loved taking us boxing. So we had like a boxing session at Costa Sue's gym there in Rockdale. And I was a young kid, you know, I hadn't done much boxing in my life or anything. So, you know, we got partnered up and everyone got a partner and you had to have a spar and stuff. And so it was sort of like winner stays on sort of thing. And it got to the end and poor Galen had been flogging everyone. And then Ricky Short said, is there any other bloke here wants to just jump in with Gal to finish off? And one by one, he went to the other blokes in the team and everyone did the old... It came to me and I was shaking in my boots and I was like, oh God, I don't want to go in there, but I'm just going to show him I'm not scared of him. Came to me, I said, I'll take him. I'll go. You sure, Sammy? He's like, you sure, Sammy? I said, yeah, I'll go. I'll jump in. So I was already shaking my boots. So I jumped in, put the pads on, and Gal gave me the biggest hiding I have ever got. And I was just like, he was just flogging me in the corner. And then the trainer said, Sammy, what are you doing? Move. And then I moved back and Gal came forward. And then I got one on Gal. Like I got a good one on Gal. And then I just saw Gal move back and his eyes just sort of lit up. And he came back to finish me off. And thank God everyone jumped in and grabbed him off me. That was a good lesson, but that actually got me in Ricky Stewart's good book. So he debuted me in that season, and then I pulled a hammy in the warm-up, but I wanted to get on and get my matches, T, as you would know back then.
3K, man, easy 3K.
You just need to cross that line, and it's yours.
I just need to get on that field, get 8 minutes on the field, probably made two carries and missed three tackles and came off. At least I got my matches, and that was the end of that.
Hey, it's one games more than anyone, most other people. But from Cronulla Sharks, you go over to Hull FC, you spend 4 years in England. And then I remember when we crossed paths at Sydney Roosters, that it was the end of 2012. It was the preseason setting up for 2013. And I remember seeing just how ripped your body was. That was one thing that came to mind. I was like, man, this guy's like, he's got a good rig on him, strong, solid.
So not looking like a melted wheelie bin? Like he's
like he came prepared for preseason.
Gotcha. No, I came. I returned back there. It's funny because when I look back now, like I turned up to Hull FC so before that, and they had to purposely cut my shorts. I was that heavy and out of shape. They had to cut my, like I had 3XL shorts, and they had to, the kit man had to cut them before the game. So that was sort of the running joke. So I turned up there and I was out of shape, but I met someone there who in terms of my football development absolutely changed my life, and that was Craig Fitzgibbon.
Yep.
Craig Fitzgibbon was someone who, I mean, and I learned a lot from him in terms of his leadership. His whole thing about being a leader was investing time into the young kids. You know, you boys will know when you play in the team when you've got some really big name superstars. And when they don't take the time in their training sessions to help you in whatever way, extras or to give you some advice on how to get better, you remember those guys. And Fitzgibbon was definitely one of those guys. And you sort of said to me at the start, said, look, if you get yourself in shape, Sammy, I can try and get you back there to the Roosters. I reckon you can have another crack at the NRL. And that was always my goal there whilst I was in Hull FC. So I knew if I came back out of shape, I had to come back, you know, ready to try and make a move there. Otherwise, I'll just never get through.
Just on that, knowing what you know now, now you're a coach for the Eels and you're part of the selection process, you're part of preparation. Why did you let yourself probably get out of shape, knowing that you're chasing, you know, a goal to be a professional athlete? Like,
you know, I'm speaking for myself, but I think a tendency in a lot of our people, and I sort of fell into that trap. I think I just got a little bit too cruisy. You know, things were going well, and I was just happy to be where I was at. Yeah, I think it's a tendency of our people that can sort of hinder our development in terms of getting better at whatever craft we're doing, whether it's sport or anything else. Once I figured out that playing on the field actually is a byproduct, how you perform on the weekend is byproduct of how you prepare, things started happening for me on the field.
You went on and won the premiership in your first year, returning back to the NRL for the Sydney Roosters. Do you put that down to the stuff that you've done off the field and the stuff you learned from Fitzgibbon as well?
Yeah, exactly. And I knew it was sort of, I was at that stage in my career, T, where I was still relatively young. So I was 25 when I went to the Roosters, but I sort of knew that it was my last shot at it. And, you know, I think what's very important is if you surround yourself with good people, and I was very lucky. I had a wonderful partner in my wife, Jill, who was just, she knew what I wanted and she knew how hard I had to work and was always there supporting me. And, you know, if I wanted to have a couple of cheap meals during the week, whether it be, you know, KFC or the old takeaways, it was always be like, is that the best thing for you? And I was like, oh, damn. No, it's not. I was pretty fortunate, but I knew I didn't have a second chance there. The team was so good at the Roosters and the coaching was so good that I knew that if I had a month of cruising, whether it be in pre-season or during the season, I was A, not going to get a go, and I would probably never be seen again. So I had to sort of go after it.
Yeah, one thing I loved about our time at the Roosters is that we were like students of the game. You know, we had to learn and learn our role, and I think we had some really good teachers with Trent Robinson and, you know, Fitzy as well, which developed not only my game but a number of people's game, a number of players' games, including yourself. Now you go on to Catalan Dragons after spending 4 years winning the premiership, you know, playing for New Zealand as well in the same year. 4 years later, you go to Catalan Dragons, create history, winning the Challenge Cup, but then you transition into coaching. Where did your first thought of like, okay, this is the road that I want to take? I want to take up coaching and give back to a young Samoa.
Yeah, I think my time in France probably contributed the most in terms of my own personal development, not just as a player, but in terms of what I saw worked in helping to get the best out of players. So I got a call one after last season at the Roosters when I was at the airport, getting my luggage after we lost in Brisbane for the Roosters, and it was the French coach. And the French coach said to me, I was off contract at the time, he said to me, look, I'm going to take you on. They were going through a phase where they needed to change the culture of the club. That's pretty much what he said to me. And we want to get you in. I've spoken to Trent Robinson about your leadership qualities. We want to change the culture of the club. So anyhow, fast forward, I decided to move over there with my wife and my young daughter at the time. And what moving to France taught me in terms of, I took the lessons that I got as a player from Craig Fitzgibbon, Willie Marnie, Mark O'Meally, a lot of the older boys that I did play with along the years. I tried to do that in my role because I was one of the senior players. So I took a lot of the young, I tried to anyway, take a lot of the young French kids under my wing and, you know, show them what's right to do and how to prepare and how to train and all that sort of jazz. And I found that that was my niche. Mm. Of course, I went there as a player and I was at the back end of my career, but I felt like I could give something back. And I think the coach at the time, he was Steve McNamara. I think he saw that in me. And so when I retired, I went and played local French rugby league and I was doing some coaching there. I had no ambitions to coach, but I was asked by the head coach at the time if I could sort of be like a player assistant coach. So I did that, and then we won the comp of that team on my first year back at the second at the local French comp, and I took a liking to it, and then I was meant to go on again the next year being a player coach, and then I got the knock on the door from Steve McNamara, and he asked me, look, I want you to take you on board as my assistant. Can you do the defence and try and help me lead some of these young boys? And then that's how it all came about.
That's cool.
You know, when I think about different coaching styles out there, obviously you've got a natural ability to, you know, build rapport with players because you have that lived experience. And coming across a fair different coaches myself, you know, I guess you can sort of relate some to like a Wayne Bennett style where it seems like you could sit back and look at the field from a wider lens, and then you're probably thinking maybe Benji likes to get his hands on, get involved, get in amongst it. You know, where do you sit with your type of coaching on, you know, demonstrating, sitting back, watching? Where do you sit? What do you like to do?
Yeah, that's a great question. I probably find myself, I am hands-on at the moment, and because a lot of the what I do at Para is all the contact and tackle and all the wrestle and all the ruck D and all, everything like that. So I feel like there needs to be a balance of demonstrating to them. So you show them, you teach them, you show them, and then you get feedback. And Jason's been really, really, Jason Wiles is huge on that in terms of his coaching, is give the players feedback immediate, whether it's a drill that you're doing, tell them what they're doing right, tell them what they're doing, how can they get better. But it's never like skewed, well, you're not doing this, you know, that's not up to it, you're crap and blah, blah, blah. It's more like you're doing this well and this is what you can do better. I find my style is probably a mixture of both, where I like to physically show them once they've got the hang of the drill and if they're doing it right, and then I can give them feedback, and then we go from there.
With your coaching career so far, what's been your biggest challenge?
Biggest challenge at the start was definitely at Catlands. So trying to find the right balance with finding connection with all the different kinds of coaches. At Catlands, you've obviously got the French boys who like to do things their own way. Then you've got the English boys who come over from Super League, and then you've got the Kiwis and the Aussies who come over from the NRL. So you have to sort of try and sort of mix together and get them all sort of travelling in the one direction. That was very challenging in that respect. But I found like, because I was almost fluent in French, and I loved the French boys. So I was sort of like the link between, when I was a player, between the French, the Islanders, the Aussies. You know, my wife is blonde, blue-eyed Australian, and I'm a Kiwi Tongan. So I felt like I could mix with everyone. So yeah, I felt like that was sort of my own little superpower that I loved doing, because I like to try and get everyone sort of together, you know. So that was a challenge, stepping from playing to coaching. Yeah. But in terms of coming back to the NRL, the level of intensity and the level of basically you got way better athletes, in my opinion. So what happens in Super League, and T, you'd know this, you might have 4, 5, or 6 or so clubs who are, maybe 3 of those clubs are at a NRL level where the roster's good, the athletes are good, it's run well, they've got good crowds, good stadiums, and they're sort of there, sort of top 4 every year. And coming to the NRL, it's like multiplied. The challenge being at Parramatta is everyone is, whether you're 18, 19, 20, a lot of them, I'd say 80% of those young kids can play.
Yeah.
And they're at a level where they're hungry. Like, you know, what opened my mind is that when I didn't have a job for a year when I came back, Sammy, and I was doing concreting with my best mate, Willie Manu. And I went and did some personal development. So I rang up Ivan Curry one day and I said, look, Ivan, can I come in for a week? And just to watch how you train and watch what you do. And he goes, mate, Sammy, you can come. He was absolutely crucial to my coaching development, because I was at that time where I wasn't thinking of getting back into coaching, because coming back to Australia it's so hard to get back in the NRL, because once you're out, you're sort of gone, you know. So he took me in and I just watched him, how he operated. And he has got the perfect balance between knowing what our people are like in terms of the Polynesian players and what they need. And he's got the perfect balance between, you've got the Australian culture, you've got the Polynesian boys, and then you've got the Kiwis. And he has found a way, it's quite special, just to mix all of it together. And it's just like a humming, well-oiled machine. And just watching the young Polynesian boys, like Evan, he wasn't young at the time, so he had Jerome Luai, Moses Leota, James Fisher-Harris, and they were running the sessions. They were like outspoken. They were leading the player meetings. They were giving feedback. They were coaching on the field. And of course, you had Cleary and those boys, Isaiah Yeo and Dylan Edwards. They were the top dogs of the team. But it was such a nice thing to see the Polynesian boys have a voice.
You know, what do you think? Or for you, is that something you want to aspire to, like head coaching? Because I know assistant and head coaching, two different yeah, things. But like, so are you aspiring to be a head coach? And on top of that, you know, what do you think are the challenges for our next coaches to be able to come through and want to pursue head coaching, not just a position specific?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think at this point in time, I'm going to be honest, I don't have aspirations to be a head coach. I think my goals at the moment is to be the best assistant coach that I can be, because it's such a you know, people don't realize that the head coach of NRL, you're not only dealing with how your team plays, you've got agents, you've got players you aren't unhappy they're not getting selected, you've got parents. It's such a huge consuming role. And what I like about the assistant job is us assistant coaches, we actually coach a lot of the footy. Mm. You know, so whether it be my section is the tackle and all the contact stuff and all the wrestle and whatever it is and the ruck stuff, and then Wilesy would do the edges and the backs, and then Nathan Brown does the attack, and Scott Wisemantle, Wixie, you might know.
Yeah, Wisey's
he's
the
been
king.
Awesome. Wisey's the king, mate. He's come from rugby union for all these drills and skill development. So we find like we try and own our own little niche, and that's what I like about being an assistant coach, because you can I feel like an assistant coach, if you do it well, you can play a small part in helping a player develop, whether it's get a player to make his debut and help them get better, or how do you get the best out of a seasoned pro who's played close to 250, 300 games, like a junior bowler or, you know, Mitchell Moses, or how do you still get the best out of those older guys who have been around and done everything, you know, whilst also getting the absolute max out of the young kids. So that's what I feel like interests me, and not so much chasing after aspiring to be a head coach at some stage, because I feel like I haven't even sort of touched anywhere near what I can do as an assistant, and I want to nail that down wholeheartedly and get good at that first.
Yeah, you even think of Jason Rolls. He had been an assistant for, you know, over 10 years with under a number of great coaches and learning his role that he's in now. And the only thing I can relate it to in my own journey is being asked to coach my under 15s Division 2 sons.
That's just
40
as 10. Hard, man. Teenagers.
I thought I was going there just to, exactly what Sammy said. We coach detail. We coach stepping in, same foot, same shoulder. Now I'm dealing with who's at the barbecue on the weekend, who's playing their record, who's doing sponsorship.
Who's picking me up for training in the game?
I don't care who's doing the barbecue, bro. I don't even have boots to play. I'm here to coach footy.
Yeah. There'll be some parents not happy their kids got 12 minutes instead of 16 not getting to go off the bench, and then who's turning up to the raffle. Yeah,
I'm just a volunteer. I'm just trying my best.
Final one from me was being a coach yourself, seeing a lot, and out at Parramatta as well, seeing a lot of juniors coming through and a lot of young players, like we've seen, you know, Isaiah Yongi there, we've got Will Penasini. Are there any young Pacifica players that you're looking forward to watching and to, you know, be one of our future superstars?
Yep, sure. There's a young front row who debuted this year. His name is Sam Tuivaiti.
Big boy.
He's a big boy, but he moves incredibly well, and that's where the game's going now. You can be that big if you move well. What I mean by move well is laterally, your feet work. You've got leg speed. You can deal with change of direction and defense, and you can cover a lot of ground quickly. And he's got a motor, and he's going to be he's someone that I'm really looking forward to. Another young kid, Donny Mataele. He's a young Tongan kid. He's sort of been around the traps a bit, but he's we're trying to develop him into a good young forward. We've got a young Fijian back rower, Gideon Kautoga. He's only going to get better. And a couple of young fringe players. So a boy named Will Latu, who's back rower, who's playing in reserve grade at the moment. And they're just a few of the guys at the top of my head who I think can can develop, and we've touched nowhere near their ceiling at the moment. So that's a big part of what I'm trying to do there.
Beautiful. The future is bright at the Eels. And one final one from me. Now that with your lived experience, now as a coach, now you've done it all in the game, what's your three things that are probably going to stack the odds in your favour and give yourself the best chance of making it? What should they be doing?
At a young age, I would say first and foremost is preparation. So not just how you prepare to play, but how you prepare to get your body in a condition to play the game. And the game's a lot harder than when it was when T and I were coming through. It was physically probably more demanding back then, but now it's a lot quicker. So you need to be fit. There's no two ways about it. You need to be physically fit, so strong, fast. You need good fitness, so you need to prepare yourself. Preparation is first and foremost. Just attaching onto that preparation is surround yourself with good people.
Yeah.
Family members, friends, circle of friends, because you don't have much time. If you get it wrong, I'm lucky. I'm fortunate I got it wrong at the start of my career and I managed to get it back. These days, there's so many good players coming through. If you get it wrong at those young years, it's hard to come back because there's another kid ready to come through. The last one will probably be don't cruise, especially for young Polynesian kids. Don't be happy to just be someone who just gets there, or you might get a debut and then to think, oh yeah, I've made it now. Because the reality is, once you get on, if you make your debut, that's only half the job done. People think that you play in a row, you make your debut, they see your face on TV, that bloke's he's going to be a millionaire. No. You see a lot of the boys who do come through and make good, long, successful careers, but what you don't see is you don't see the other 80% of those boys who play 1, 2, 10, 20 games in their career and then fall off. So just put everything into it.
Prepare, Sanya, surround yourself with good people and
don't cruise. Great
advice.
Don't
cruise.
No, that's man, I feel like we could just sit here and talk for ages. And we did do summer sit downs, and I reckon we just turned this whole episode into a summer sit down.
I think so. Don't worry about union chat. We'll get rid of that.
Worry about all the previews later.
Nah, but, hey, boys, I appreciate what you boys are doing as well. You know, I'm only playing a small part, and that's part of coaching. You know, it's something that I enjoy, obviously, and I've surrounded myself with good people, and I've got a loving wife and very good family who can help me sort of get to where I want to get to in that regard. But you boys are doing a lot of a lot more important work out there in the community. That's in my opinion, because football only plays a small part of your life, and you boys are doing a lot more than what I can do. So keep on with it.
Oh, you're giving me goosebumps, bro.
Stop it.
I appreciate your time, and again, I wish you all the best in your coaching career. I know you've had an awesome playing career, and I'm so proud to be a small piece of that. But from everyone here in Nijin Footy, we'll be backing you always.
Absolutely, brother.
And wish you all the best, brother. Up the Eels, eh?
Up the Eels.
Hi, guys. My name's Antiana Dalakai, and you're listening to Nijin Footy.
Well, Sammy, man, I think we could have spoken to Sammy.
That's Sammy a summer
Moa,
sit-down.
Sammy Moa.
Yeah. Yeah, you speak to me a lot. But what also was very good was I thought his three takeaways for any young aspiring players, you know, those three things around
preparation.
What were they again? Nah, surround yourself with great people and don't cruise.
Definitely. That's a big one. Don't cruise.
Don't cruise.
Just always stay hungry.
Yeah.
Keep building, keep growing, get after it. Well, Sammy, that's the end of the show. Great to have you back from Palau, mate.
Mate, it is great to be back. And make sure you tell your footy loving friends about Nijin Footy. Find it wherever you get your podcasts or on the ABC Pacific website. And thank you for Will Popowate and Toops for jumping in. This show was produced on the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation.